Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
All right, you know what? Come on, let's just do it. Enough
of
this clock.
There's no reason to wait.
There we go. We're sitting around yawning, and what is that about?
Hello, everyone. It's Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart.
Woo!
Today, you got questions. You've got answers. No, wait. Yes, we might have answers. Maybe you already have your own answers on the inside.
Yes.
Just look inside yourselves, friends. It's What Do You Want to Do Wednesday?
My goodness.
We're keeping it together.
Thanks for sending
it together.
That's right. We are. Well, I was going to roll this out later, but let's remember tomorrow is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. So, you know, anyway, we'll get there.
Oh, yeah.
What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, send your questions. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org. Subject line questions is the best way to do that. We will read your emails, but I personally like voice memos better. It gets all on the pod and saves you having to listen to me. So let's go.
All right. On the subject of the housing market, otherwise known as all I ever talk about in the Bay Area, Randall Drew writes in, as a lower middle class millennial who under normal circumstances has a rough road ahead of them to attain home ownership, I'm wondering what, if anything, COVID has done to the housing market as it relates to lower middle income earners. And a lot of people have asked this question.
Yeah.
And God, it seems like, though, so far, nothing to help you whatsoever.
Nothing. And in point of fact, things that will make it worse and more competitive, the primary one of which is low interest rates, right? Interest rates are so low. The 30-year mortgage, the average 30-year mortgage just hit like 3.1 or something, which is the lowest in ever, which is bananas. So if you live in a place where the housing market is competitive, hello, Oakland and the Bay Area, it gets no better for you because of this terrible thing that's happening in the economy. It just really doesn't. And that's a huge drag, right? Because the people who are being affected most by this pandemic are the people on the lower and middle income end of the spectrum. And that's right. That's not great.
Well, and like the stock market, it's like things that are already out of reach actually just keep getting more out of reach. Pending home sales. I looked this up while we were talking. I ducked it. Pending home sales spike a record, right? The danger.
Yeah.
Spiked a record 44.3% in May.
Yeah.
44.3% because people who still have jobs and have been waiting for summer to come, because actually, like, it's been a long season of scarcity. Home inventory has been low all across the country. And then now it was like sort of starting to pick up because summer came and people maybe are moving and then rates are really low. And so the housing market has actually, in point of fact, gone bananas. So you're like even more out of luck than you were before. And let me tell you, as someone who's been trying to buy a house in Oakland for like 10 years, I'm with you, buddy. I'm annoyed.
Sorry, that's me closing the door. My daughter's getting a haircut out on the backyard. She's doing that Locks for Love thing, which is kind of cool. So she's got really long hair, and really soon she will not have really long hair. Housing. Back to the issue at hand. I'm sure they're taking pictures. What was I going to say? So here's the thing about housing and wealth in this economy. The best way to build wealth in this economy is to own a home. And so what is happening systemically is that people who can't buy homes can't get upward economic mobility, right? That's enormously challenging for us as an economy, and that's a bad thing. And it's in my mind now because we're doing a lot of coverage of diversity and black people in this economy, and that is a huge factor in how far behind they are the average white household. It's huge.
Oh, and make no mistake, like so many other things related to inequality, that is only going to get worse because we're starting to see already banks in the position of saying, we're not sure how to evaluate creditworthiness because so many people have put payments on pause. And some of them are finding that they might be issuing loans to riskier consumers by accident.
Yep.
Mark my words, like one of them gets burned and all of the same lending restrictions that we even saw after the 2008 crisis will go back into effect and they will disproportionately hit people of color and low-income lenders, borrowers the most.
Yep.
It's hard not to get mad every day.
Yeah.
This is the digging, by the way, the digging that leads to Thursday's hollowed out shell. It's happening. It's happening right now.
All right. Let us change gears just a
dead.
Next. Here comes one from Nathan Hammer. He says this. I've been listening to a lot of different podcasts talking about problems with race and gender discrimination in tech companies and in AI facial recognition technology. I was wondering if there's been a push to have some kind of certification program or organization for tech companies that would certify them as being racially and gender equitable. What do you think? I mean, there was that story in the Times the other day about the first guy ever arrested with facial recognition technology. And it turned out, of course, not to be the guy.
Right.
You know,
mistakenly. Yeah. I mean, what is what is kind of a bummer is that right now, the only actions are ironically coming from tech companies. The only actions to try to hold the industry accountable with respect to AI and facial recognition technology are largely coming from the companies themselves, many of whom have in recent days said, we're not going to sell facial recognition technology to police. We're going to pause.
Right.
IBM exited the business completely. They just said it's like too problematic. It's likely that it's not even fixable. We talked to Joy Bulamwini, who's an MIT Media Lab researcher who has covered this for, you know, in 2018, she was like, this is really bad and it can't get fixed. And I don't know what kind of certification program could certify these algorithms as non-racist until society isn't, you know?
Yeah.
It's a pretty...
people write the algorithms.
People write the algorithms. And the data sets are based on long, long histories of racism and sexism. In fact, MIT, it was just reported today, took down this huge data set. They have a massive training set that the university built, and they use it to train the machines, to teach machine learning models. And I believe, actually, that people have complained about this database for a long time. Huge data sets are hard to come by. And so a lot of people use MIT's data. And it's this library called 80 Million Tiny Images. And basically, researchers are like, this is massively problematic. It has like all these racist images. It had, you know, it's teaching the machines to identify women based on people in bikinis. Like, the women and people of color labeled with all these terrible slurs. This is what is training algorithms. Like, computer code is not written in a vacuum. And so I appreciate the point that there could be. I mean, I think only Notre Dame in its AI. In the data science program, I believe that Notre Dame is one of the very, very few that actually builds in an ethics course into its data.
Tomorrow on the program is a thing we call Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. So that's question number two on this Wednesday program of why we call Thursday Hollowed Out Shell Thursday.
Dig.
Okay.
Dig.
Next one, shall we? Shall we? Let us.
Yeah.
Please.
It's like, let's keep the bummer backhoe going here. The other week, we talked about there's a t-shirt, though. We could totally sell that t-shirt. The other week, we talked about how the pandemic would impact the value of the dollar, potentially, as the world's reserve currency, because we like to geek out about Fed stuff. And we were validated. John, no last name, sent in this voice memo on this topic.
Hey, Kai and Molly. In a recent episode, you guys discussed if there were any viable alternatives to the dollar as the reserve currency for the world. And I started being curious about what is the advantage and what are the disadvantages to us as being the world's reserve currency.
So the very biggest one is that we can borrow and print and do whatever we want to with our money, and we don't have to deal with transaction costs and all of that stuff, right? And because we are the reserve currency, there is a huge demand for the American dollar. So people buy U.S. government debt. And we are issuing trillions of dollars of U.S. government debt, right? And we can do that mm-hmm. at very low interest rates because everybody wants it. Now, that's a blessing and a curse, the rates, right? Because one could argue that the Congress of the United States and the executive branch have been profligate in their spending, in part because money is so cheap, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not all upside. But look, it's really cheap for us to borrow money, and that's a huge advantage, especially right now.
But what's the disadvantage? Advantage. What are the drawbacks, though? What's the problem with being the world's currency? That we could issue so much that then we end up in,
right.
Investopedia says, asset bubbles and ballooning government debt?
Well, that we have that right now. We have that right
totally
now.
We totally have We've that. Had that. Oh, for, good.
Yeah, right? I mean, look, just the stock market is disconnected from the actual reality, right? And we have a national debt that is north of, I think it's $23 trillion now. Maybe 26, mm-hmm. I frankly forget, but what's $3 trillion between friends? Yeah, you bet. It's so easy for us to fuel our debt obligated spending that we don't even have to think about it. And as you can see by the fact right. that Congress of the United States is spending money like this, we don't think about it. You know, that's it. I mean, we have a lot, there are a lot of advantages otherwise, right? But those right. are the biggies. It's the borrowing cost. Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
All
Next.
Right, B. Patton, here we go. Moving on. B. Patton writes, if I turn location off on my Android Nougat phone, is Google Alphabet still tracking my location regardless of my willingness to put up with the inconvenience of having my location services off? I do not know the answer.
Yeah. That's a yes.
Oh, they are? Okay. Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Even when your phone is in
Why
like
have
airplane
the
mode. I mean, yeah. I don't know what people think that it necessarily does. To have the switch. I mean, I guess the switch is
off.
In theory,
that's what the switch does. The switch that's labeled right. off turns everything off.
I believe that. You know, this is like it depends on what the definition of is.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, it is true. You can turn off location services, and I think that what happens in theory is that only it just stops apps from sharing the location data. With like each other or something, but it is totally still happening. Like your phone could be in airplane mode and the accelerometer in it is still tracking your steps. It knows like if you're on a bike, it knows how fast you're going. It's still tracking it all. And Google always has it. The end. Well. I mean, it's just like, it is just that simple. I know, dig.
Yeah. All right, fine.
Bummer, backhoe.
Wait, goodness.
Before we go, I just want to ask like one happy question that I'm kind of curious about, and okay, I'm not the only one.
Yes.
I have noticed, writes Beth Collins, that when Kai makes a statement about middle America small business, he very frequently refers to Ottumwa, Iowa. And I am curious to know why Ottumwa, because full disclosure, says Beth, my parents grew up about an hour east of there. What's your story?
That's pretty
Rizdal?
Funny. So I have two random geographical go-tos. One is Sheboygan, because I like the way it sounds coming out of my mouth. Sheboygan, I think that's fun to say. And Ottumwa, Iowa, I use because back in the day, I was a big fan of MASH on television, and Radar O'Reilly's hometown is Ottumwa, Iowa.
Oh, my God. That's so great.
Right.
That was really
there
worth
it. There you go.
That's
it.
That was really worth
that's
it.
That's it. Mm-hmm. There you go. There you go.
See? All right. We did a like a – see, now we – you know what? We should do this all the time, a make me smile question. Because we need them because of the bummer backhoe situation. All right, that is it for us. We will be back tomorrow with Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. In the meantime, send your questions, makemesmart@marketplace.org, subject line questions. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, marketplace.org/newsletters. And just so you know, there is a silver lining this week to Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. Because mm-hmm. we'll be off on Friday. Well, one of us will be off on Friday Independence holiday. It's okay. I only have to do one show that day, so it's kind of
I was just
going like
to say, you're
vacation.
Only doing one show. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to do happy hour tomorrow. Economics on Tap tomorrow, Thursday. We'll be live streaming it. We got that back up and running. Everything is turning up roses with it because the backhoe is turning up roses.
Oh, my
See
Lord.
See what I did there?
Nah.
Yeah. Right. Anyway,
so
tune
we'll
into the marketplace,
we'll
8 p.m. Yeah, do it.
Marketplace 8 p.m. on YouTube, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. Have a drink with us. I need to make sure I have beer in the fridge. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. Ethan Parents is our video intern. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our smart speaker skills.
Today's show was masterfully engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand, also producing the show this week, is Sitara Nieves. And I rudely screwed her name up, even though she did all this
That's
work.
All right.
Senior vice president and general manager of this operation is Deborah Clark.
All right, quick update on Locks for Love. The 13-year-old just came and stuck her head in here. She went from hair down to her butt to hair up by her shoulders in like 10 minutes. Looks cute.
Oh, my goodness.
How about that? Yeah.
Oh, that's cute. Adorable.
Super cute. There you go.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.